Our gospel reading is from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 9, verses 28 through 36. Now about 8 days after these sayings, Jesus took with him Peter and John and James and went up on the mountain to pray. And while he was praying, the appearance of his face changed, and his clothes became as bright as a flash of lightning. Suddenly, they saw two men, Moses and Elijah, talking to him. They appeared in glory and were speaking about his exodus, which he was about to fulfill in Jerusalem. Now Peter and his companions were weighed down with sleep. But as they awoke, they saw his glory and the two men who stood with him. Just as they were leaving him, Peter said to Jesus, "Master, it is good for us to be here. Let us set up three tents, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah," not realizing what he was saying. While he was saying this, a cloud came and overshadowed them, and they were terrified as they entered the cloud. Then from the cloud came a voice that said, "This is my son, my chosen. Listen to him." When the voice had spoken, Jesus was found alone, and they kept silent, and in those days told no one any of the things they had seen. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. One of my favorite stories of an unexpected vision comes from Thomas Merton in his book, Conjectures of a Guilty Bystander. And he writes, "In Louisville, at the corner of 4th and Walnut, in the center of the shopping district, I was suddenly overwhelmed with the realization that I loved all the people I could see, that they were mine and I theirs, that we could not be alien to one another, even though we were total strangers. It was like waking from a dream of separateness, of spurious self-isolation in a special world. This sense of liberation from an illusory difference was such a relief and such a joy to me that I almost laughed out loud. And if only everybody could realize this, but it cannot be explained. There is no way of telling people that they are all walking around shining like the sun." Now, to me, this story by Merton has always given me an entry point into this transfiguration story, which we must admit is a very strange story. Jesus, dazzling white, flanked by Moses and Elijah. Clearly, Peter didn't know what to make of it either, as he proposes three tents for each of them. He didn't know what to say. And we don't always know how to access this story either. And our friends who are here for the Gospel Jazz Sunday, you're probably thinking, this is now the third year in a row that you've heard me preach on this story. Do I know any other stories? But next year in the Gospel of John on Transfiguration Sunday, we actually will have a different story. Because it's Matthew, Mark, and Luke that share this story of Transfiguration. And Matthew, Mark, and Luke are so similar that I think sometimes preachers struggle a bit to differentiate the different versions. But there is one easy way to differentiate Luke's version of the story from Matthew and Mark. And that is, in Luke, it all happened while Jesus was praying. Luke even introduces the story by saying they went up to the mountain to pray, to go to what the Celtics call a thin place. This place where the membrane between heaven and earth is very thin. There is a sense that it already is a very holy place. And there's no way that we can manufacture a vision like this, but we can create space for something like it in our prayer. Luke says that the disciples were weighed down with sleep. They almost missed the whole thing. They were so tired. And when we are sleepy and sleep deprived and overwhelmed, we're likely to miss it too. We can miss the signs of God breaking in our world and in the world of the people we love. So in our prayer discipline, we can try to be as attentive as we can. Maybe our prayers could even begin, Lord, help me to see what I need to see. Help me to hear what I need to hear. And maybe at the end of the day, we can pray and review our whole day and think about everything that happened. And with the benefit of a little bit of hindsight and a little bit of knowing the whole day in context, going back, where were there God moments in the day, even if they weren't obvious? What was God wanting me to see or hear? Creating this kind of space for prayer is how we can create a space for the unexpected, that unexpected moment of clarity and inspiration. J.R.R. Tolkien once invented a word which I love, eucatastrophe. And what that means is that it is some kind of like sudden inbreaking, some kind of sudden vision of how everything will work out just before things become much more difficult. Like Frodo having a vision of the ring being destroyed, like right before the hardest part of the journey. Or just some glimpse that we know it will be okay. And what has happened in Luke is that Jesus has just told the disciples that he will go to Jerusalem where he will be crucified and killed. Not the thing that you want your chosen Messiah to say. Most disciples do not want to follow a crucified Messiah. But even after that revelation by Jesus, we then have this much more spectacular revelation, a glimpse of Easter before Lent has even begun, some kind of assurance that God is with you and will never abandon you, a eucatastrophe at the moment we needed it. And that's the gift of such a vision. And Merton went on to say this. He said, it was then that I could suddenly see the secret beauty of the people's hearts. The depths of their hearts where neither sin nor desire nor self-knowledge can reach, the core of the reality, the person that each one is in God's eyes. If only they could all see themselves as they really are. If only we could see each other that way all the time, there would be no more war, no more hatred, no more cruelty, no more greed. But this cannot be seen, only believed and understood by a peculiar gift. Do we dare to have such a big vision? Can we even imagine it? And in those moments when we say, no, that vision's too big, we can't imagine peace on that scale. We can't imagine an end to greed. We can't imagine economic justice. We can't imagine any of those things. It's just way too big. Maybe that is the moment when we're gifted with our own eucatastrophe, some kind of vision that inspires us to carry on, that our friends in Ukraine can still dare to dream about peace and independence, that we can still dare to dream about peace in Gaza, Israel, and the West Bank, that we can dare to dream about confronting our own country's challenges in ways that draw us together rather than driving us apart. We need such a vision to help us realize that these dreams are not too big, that we can live into them. And with the gift of such a big vision, we can then try to imagine the more practical possibilities. And when Jesus and the disciples came down the mountain, they were once again in the real world of ministry and connection. Jesus healed a boy that the disciples had been unable to heal. And then they continued doing ministry all along the road to Jerusalem. Heidi Newmark is a Lutheran pastor, and for 20 years she was the pastor of Transfiguration Lutheran Church in the South Bronx. And she wrote a memoir called Breathing Space, in which she shared about her many experiences. And she says that when the disciples of this Bronx church unlocked the doors of their private shelter and stepped out into the neighborhood, they did meet the distress of the community, convulsed and mauled by poverty. But they also discovered Transfiguration as a congregation in connection with others. And then she went on to write, "But living high up in the rarefied air isn't the point of Transfiguration. It was never meant to be a private experience of spirituality removed from the public square. It was a vision to carry us down, a glimpse of unimagined possibility at the ground level." During this season of Lent, I invite us to pray, praying for a vision that is big enough to dispel our cynicism and our doubts, and then praying also for a sense of all the practical possibilities, to pray that we can catch our own glimpse of all the unimagined possibilities at ground level. All glory and praise be to our God. Amen.